All right. Now, just to update people before we get to our primary topic tonight, which is really going to fascinate a lot of you. Believe it. Chromosome 2. That's coming up in just a minute. But let's remind people what's on the agenda for the COVID genocide and the COVID injectable bioweapon that is now being ready to be, ordained for its fall debut. We're looking at just a few weeks in September, and the new version comes out. What do you know about that? Anything new?
My understanding is that it's already out in at least some places.
Oh, well, we better start calling around.
It's ready to go.
Should we call around?
Well,
I didn't know
we
this.
Could.
Yeah. If you don't know, Eric and I have fun calling Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid. That's what we do for fun. Anyway,
yeah.
It is very enlightening to get somebody on the phone who's not particularly defensive, because they will tell you things that the average person doesn't really know about. And the bottom line is, up until they ran out of the old stock, they were injecting upwards of 100 a day still. And this is just a few months ago. So
yeah.
nothing is changing in terms of the inherent and intellectual baseline of most Americans. They just don't have it. It's not their fault. They're fed a diet of idiocy, and they're addicted to it. So it's crazy. Do you know anything new that they put into this? Has anybody even talking about what they've done to make this the newest and greatest version of the injectable?
I haven't heard any specifics, just that it's, you know, we'll cover the latest variant, JN1 or something,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
or.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to what the Japanese said about all variants. They all came from labs. So,
yeah.
Ha ha, the joke's on all of us. Okay, when I was in college back in 1894, back in the day, we used to have what they called college, they used to be mocked as college intellectual conversations. They were just discussions. You know, when you're young, you're finding things out, and young people always will come across something that is particularly appealing to them, like Darwin and evolution and all of that, and they'll push it. They'll buy right in. It gives them something to hang their personalities on, and they'll argue it. Well, this is before they had done their final work on the entire human genome and had it all decoded, so to speak. We were aware of genes and chromosomes, and when that was discussed honestly and objectively, I would always say, what else do you need? That is the machinery that is running this biological entity we call Homo sapiens. We are a constructed species. The chromosomes and genes, what we'd call it now would be the hard drive instructions, but we didn't talk in those terms back then. But I was pushing back then that the chromosomes and genes in the human body were not there by accident. Somebody built this machine that we live in, this body, and I don't think anyone has really ever, with an honest look at it, walked away from that completely. I think we are machines, biological machines, biophysical machines, and the directions and the instructions and all the rest of the operating information is to be found in the chromosomes and genes. Yes?
Yeah. The DNA is an interesting thing. You know, it was the whole project, the Human Genome Project, that endeavored to map the entire human genome. Took 13 years, and it was finally completed, was it 2003?
Something like
but
that.
Still,
just after,
you know,
the turn of the century.
Yeah, and so it was rather surprising what they discovered, and very little of it. I think 1% to 2% is all that codes for proteins, and the rest is, you know, modifications to those proteins depending on, you know, the situation or the environment.
Well, updates, you know, upgrades, so to speak.
Well, just to be able to adapt. you know, we're not static. We're dynamic beings, so we can, you know, be fluid in different situations. And there's still 1% that is unknown. You know, for the most part, it's been done, but
1% of what is unknown? Genes?
Our DNA, the human DNA.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And what about the parts of our system that are called either junk DNA or alien DNA?
Well, it's probably a misnomer to call them junk, because, you know, simply because we don't know exactly what they do and we think they're just placeholders, so to speak.
Right.
But no, I don't think we're even close to realizing what our true genetic potential is.
Well, we're only allowed to use by those very genes and chromosomes 5% of our brain. Now, who put a governor on that? Who limited us? Who did that? Who done it? Somebody done it. It didn't just happen. Otherwise, we'd be using much more of our brains. So we were limited for a reason. It's like we have the potential, but that potential hasn't been greenlighted yet. Here's a little clip I'm going to play. Some of you who've been around for a while remember Greg Braden. He's still at it. He's a very articulate presenter of a lot of eclectic information. And he did put together a nice piece on the human genome and chromosomes. And I would just, I'm going to ask this rhetorically real quick, just for fun. Would there be a better place to look for proof that we are engineered beings than to look into the chromosomes and their genes? If we could find something in there that did not, could not happen in a Darwinian sense, that would prove that somebody was behind the concoction of these incredible instructions on building and operating and maintaining a physical form and a mental form, wouldn't the best place to look be in the chromosomes for proof?
Yeah, that would, yeah. Yeah, you know, once you decode them, and here's the thing, though, we have, as a human species, evidence of genetic manipulation, previous genetic manipulation. In other words, we did not evolve entirely naturally from our ancestors, the apes.
Now, a lot of you would say, well, that's proof of God. Whatever, that's fine, however you want to view it. I don't know, but there was clearly intervention and creativity in the construction of this
intention.
Species.
Yeah,
that's
intervention with intention, yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to play some of Greg Braden, and you're going to hear him lay it out very simply. He's a good communicator, and we'll stop and talk a little bit about it here and there. But here's the overall truth that I want you to listen for. In chromosome 2 is irrefutable data, science, irrefutable evidence in chromosome 2 that we are being interfered with, tweaked, and otherwise directed by a higher intelligence. It's the proof is there. So you're going to hear about that now. Then we'll talk more about it in a bit. Anything else?
No, that's good.
Okay, here we go.
The Human Genome Project was the first attempt to map our genetic makeup. It began in 1990 and it ended, and the announcements were made in 2003, and Francis Collins was one of the visionaries that led this. I have a lot of respect for this man. He's done some amazing work. Don't necessarily agree with all of his conclusions, but I have a lot of respect for him as a man. Before the Human Genome Project, there was a belief in the life sciences, in biology, that it took one gene to program each protein in the human body. And because there are approximately 100,000 proteins, give or take, the thinking was, if it takes one gene to create each of those, that we would have about 100,000 genes. And the implications for that were vast. The pharmaceutical companies believed that if they could isolate those 100,000 genes, that they could create products that could target target each of those individual genes. There's 100,000 new products. And in terms of disease and what it means for longevity and for, I mean, everything from cancers to diabetes to, whatever is happening in the human body, the thinking was it could be addressed through understanding the map of these genes. What happened surprised everyone, because at the end of the Genome Project, it was discovered that the human body only has about 20 to 25,000 genes. That's not just a little mistake. That's not just a small margin of error. That is a magnitude, several magnitudes of difference from what was believed to be happening. And what it told the researchers was that something about their theory was wrong. And what they discovered is that it's not a one-to-one correspondence. It's not one gene for every protein. Individual genes have the ability to program different proteins. This is where epigenetics comes from. It is the environment that determines how the gene expresses and what proteins it creates. Some genes can create many, many, many proteins. And when I say environment, it can be the external environment or the world around us. So, those are toxins in the environment can downregulate genes, and harmful UV radiation or radiation from a nuclear power plant or, those kinds of things. But perhaps the most powerful environment is not outside of us. It's inside of us. It is the thoughts, feelings, emotions, beliefs. Stress is a powerful epigenetic factor that can upregulate or downregulate these genes. So with only 20 to 25,000 genes, we can program that 100,000 plus a number of proteins that allows us to be who we are.
100,000 proteins, is that still a good figure total that actually build and
create? Yeah, it's an estimate. Some have said much more, but that's probably a good round number to go by.
Yeah. Did you ever run across in your studies one gene for one protein, or was that earlier or later?
I don't know that I ever really thought about it. I never had the idea that one gene, one protein.
Well,
I knew better than that.
Was an early bedrock position of a lot of scientists. Which is very interesting, because they dropped that, as you heard Greg just say, and now one gene can create many different kinds of proteins out of that 100,000. So if we want to round it off, we got 25,000 genes and 100,000 proteins, so each gene, just to keep it simple, can create four different proteins, although it varies, but that just gives you an idea. Now, proteins are very, very small. I just want you to keep this in mind. Can you give us a quick overview of protein size and nanotech size?
Well, proteins are just strings of amino acids, and they form the building blocks of structure in your body. The simplest protein that you could imagine would be, not simple in terms of not complex, but like a muscle. That muscle is considered protein. Bones are considered protein. Skin is protein. And so there's many different types of proteins that create your structure. And then other proteins are enzymes. And enzymes are catalysts that make reactions happen. Because, there's lots of chemical reactions that need to take place to run the body. So proteins are produced in each cell. Each organ has a set of proteins that it produces that's, enables that organ to function the way it does. And then
size-wise, with nanotech, though, is a protein considered a nano-sized item?
Yeah, I would say so. We go by molecular weight, but it has to be something that fits inside of a cell, at least initially.
Gotcha. So when we go out and we've talked about this shedding issue for years, and we've advised against direct skin contact or contact with fomites that carry germs, viruses, bacteria, debris, and proteins. Proteins are shed, especially when we're talking about the spike protein. It's shed through the skin of people who have been injected or are otherwise afflicted with creating spike proteins, and they're leaving them on doorknobs, door handles, grocery shopping carts, etc. So we do advise you to keep that in mind. Wear gloves when you go shopping, or at least hold the cart on the sides, the outsides, away from the handle. If you get stuck without gloves, you can do that. It's very important to understand that proteins will go right through your skin. Okay? No hesitation. It's easy.
Yeah, well,
they're
that small.
Mind.
Yeah.
They are. All right, here we go.
That was a big deal, and scientists don't like to talk about that very much because it means everything they were teaching up until 2003 was based on this one gene for one protein principle. It was wrong. It was wrong, and that was hard for them to admit that. So I want to say that just about the Genome Project in general. It's amazing because it told us where we were wrong, and it opened the door to a powerful possibility of self-regulation. This is something that comes into play for a lot of advocates when it comes to Darwin's theory, because what this video was all about was the efficacy of evolution in general. And I'm just going to say to you straight up, as a scientist, I'm a degree geologist, I believe in evolution. I support evolution. Evolution is a fact. I've seen it in the fossil records. I've seen it in insects preserved in amber in Florissant, Colorado. I have seen it in marine life. I've seen it in plants. I've seen it in animals. So I have no problem with the theory of evolution to explain certain forms of life. Here's where the issue comes in. Darwin's theory of evolution breaks down when it comes to humans, when it comes to us. Scientists are pretty much in agreement, well, they were in agreement, that we appeared upon this earth about 200,000 years ago. A recent discovery has now pushed that date back to about 300,000 years. So scientists are pretty much in agreement that, let's just say that we humans appeared on earth between 200 and 300 years ago. No controversy around that. The question is, how did it happen?
He meant to say 200,000 to 300,000.
Yeah.
They are in agreement that what are called anatomically modern humans, that's us, and the acronym is AMH, anatomically modern humans appeared 200,000 to 300,000 years ago. The issue comes in terms of when we appeared and the way we appeared. We appeared relatively suddenly in the overall scheme of things. We appeared with a brain capacity, a brain size, 50% larger than our nearest primate relative. We appeared with the ability for complex speech in a way that no other form of life. And
I don't want to live 9 to 5, paycheck to paycheck.
I wish I would.
All right, hold on. We got a rude interruption. One commercial and back to Greg.
These are due to mutations that happened in our genome in a way that cannot be attributed to natural processes. They can't.
Okay. Changes in our genome that cannot be attributed to Darwinian sorts of natural processes. So who did it? What happened? How were these changes triggered? All right, listen up.
Be attributed to evolution, at least as we know evolution today. Evolution through Darwin's perspective, or from Darwin's perspective, is slow change gradually over long periods of time. Stephen Jay Gould, another evolutionary biologist, put forth a theory of what's called punctuated evolution, where it looks like things aren't happening for a while, and then there's a big jump, and then nothing happens in the big jump. We don't really fit into any of those, and I want to talk to you a little bit about why that is, and it has to do with the genome. In the human genome, one of our chromosomes is a mysterious chromosome. It's number 2, and it creates...
Okay, now this is the important part. Chromosome number 2.
To provide... a large percentage, I don't know the exact percentage, but a large percentage of the DNA in our nucleus, of our genome, is this chromosome. It's the second largest chromosome in the human body. I know that. How chromosome 2 came to be is controversial, and it is mysterious. But let me tell you why it's important. There are about 12 to 1300 genes on human chromosome number 2. I'm going to talk about only one of those genes. It's called TBR2. TBR2 is responsible for the brain size, twice as large as our nearest primate relative, is chimps and gorillas and apes, twice as large. It is responsible for about 86% of the neocortex. And the neocortex in the human brain is where we attribute so many of the faculties that give us our humanness, our ability for empathy and sympathy and compassion, our ability to self-regulate our own biology. And so much of our mirror neurons, for example, are in the neocortex. Gene TBR1 is responsible for much of that. And gene TBR1 is the product of something mysterious that happened to create human chromosome number 2. If we didn't have chromosome number 2, we wouldn't be here. Now, what it is that happened to create human chromosome 2, this is where the mystery comes in. You've probably heard of telomeres. Some people pronounce them telomeres. They're protective caps on the end of the chromosome so that each time a cell divides, that's a traumatic experience for the chromosome. And the telomeres take the hit of that trauma rather than the vital DNA information below the telomere. So if you're going to have a cell division and a part of the DNA does not make that split, you don't want that to be a vital piece of information that programs your immune system or, you know, your circulatory system or something like that. So the way that we are made is that the telomeres will be the portions that don't make the cut, and all the vital DNA inside does. Those telomeres are on the ends of the chromosome. So I'm saying this to you because in human chromosome 2, not only are telomeres on the ends of the chromosomes, they're also in the middle.
That's impossible. Only one chromosome number 2. Telomeres on the end and telomeres in the middle. Now, what would that suggest to you? Some of you are probably figuring this out already. Let's go ahead.
And they are in the middle at a pinch point where scientists now know that two previously existing, fully intact chromosomes fused together. So two pre-existing chromosomes fused together, and the fusion where the telomeres used to be on the ends, they're now in the middle. That's not where it ends. After that fusion occurred, there were genes that were silenced, is a term that's used when the genes are no longer active. There were genes that appeared to be removed, genes that appeared to be inserted to stabilize the fusion and to take away the redundancy. I mean, think about this. If there were two fully intact chromosomes, they were each doing their own thing, you know, and all the functions were there. When you fuse them together, there is an overlap in function. There's a redundancy, and you don't want that. You don't want them working against one another. So there was a process where certain genes were either removed or they were silenced or some others were activated. All of this happened in a very short period of time. Now, we know of nothing in nature that provides or allows for this kind of a fusion. Now,
okay. Imagine, let's just take this. You've got two pieces of string, 4 inches long. Each one is a fully functional chromosome. I know they don't look like that exactly, but and on the end of each one are telomeres. Think of little like hair-like projections on the ends of each piece of string, left end, right end. Now, you're going to bring these two pieces of string together and fuse them together. So you have one new chromosome made of two, and in the very center where the fusion was are telomeres. They can't be there. They shouldn't be there. In no other chromosome are they in the center. Something fused these two together and then went in and cleaned up the genetic redundancy, and genetic conflicts that would arise from such a fusion. Somebody did this. Somebody. Don't think human. Think intelligent life form, probably far in advance of ours. I've often wondered if the chromosome gene computer hard drive that all living things have isn't somebody's PhD project from Aldebaran or somewhere. I mean, think about
it.
Who
knows?
All right, here's a planet. Have fun with it. See what you can do. It's not as crazy as it might think. So here we go. Okay, yeah, I think you got that. Chromosome number 2 was two pieces of string fused end to end, and the telomeres on the inside ends of this fusion are now inside the chromosome. Doesn't work that way. But it does, because somebody fixed it.
Be clear on this, because I know biologists are watching this. We do see a fusion of chromosomes in nature, and it's actually more common than you would think. However, the way that happens is a chromosome, this pen is a chromosome, and the telomeres are the shiny places on the end, and every once in a while something will happen.
I just got my limited edition Never Surrender coin.
Take your coin and take a hike.
In nature. It could be high UV radiation, it could be environmental toxins. So there are times where human chromosomes will break. And what happens is when they break, they will fuse at those break points. So the telomeres are still on the ends. There's no telomeres in the middle, and they'll fuse at those break points. That's not what happened to you and me. What is responsible for us, one of the things, is that there was the pre-existing, fully functional chromosomes that fused and then were modified after the fusion in a way that cannot be explained through natural processes. All right, that's one thing. Now, as strange as that is, if that was the only thing that happened, or as rare as that is, you could say, wow, you know, that it's a fluke, but it happened. It's not the only mutation that happened. At the same time, there was another mutation that was happening in chromosome number 7. The result of that mutation gave us the ability for complex speech. It's the reason that chimpanzees cannot sing, and apes and gorillas cannot sing, but humans do. For over 75 million years, this chromosome, these genes in chromosome 7, they were stable, all right? And all of a sudden, there was a little, just this little switch in the DNA letters. You've seen the letters in what's called the genetic alphabet, C, T, A, G, that are abbreviations for the components that make up the DNA. There was a little switch in two of those letters that connected our tongue and the muscles in our jaw and the part of our brain that allows for complex speech and singing that happened only to us. It didn't happen to any other mammals, no other primates. It only happened to humans, and here's the kicker. It happened at exactly the same time, that 200,000 to 300,000 year range, when chromosome 2 was also fused together when humans emerged. So when we emerged, we were fully enabled and fully intact with the potential and the capabilities that we have today. They did not develop slowly, gradually over a long period of time. I did not see Francis Collins address that, and it's difficult to address that. What he did address was evolution in support of Darwin's theory for life in general, and I fully support that, because whatever we were, we inherited the DNA of those earlier forms of life. So yes, there is Darwin's evolution that played a role in the genetic makeup that led up to 200,000 or 300,000 years ago, but something happened 200,000 or 300,000 between 200,000 and 300,000 years ago that cannot be explained by Darwin's theory of evolution, that precipitated the emergence of the first anatomically modern human. And that something is a mystery. That something is, along with the miscalculations in the genome, those are two things that I didn't see Francis Collins address.
Okay, are you there?
I'm here.
I heard you drop out there for a second. Okay. chromosome 2 fused artificially, synthetically, telomeres in the middle, doesn't happen. Big intervention sign. I don't know how much more proof we're going to get that something, someone intervened in our species and turned it onto a different path. Big jump. Chromosome number 7 allows us to speak at a very higher level, although many Americans now don't go that way, but it allows us to if we want to. It also allows us to singing. No other animal sings. I know some of you say, well, birds sing. Well, it's not the same thing. Singing in and of itself is a remarkable thing, and it's traceable right to chromosome number 7. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he didn't mention this, but we also lost 2 chromosomes. Our closest ancestors, the apes, have 48.
Right.
And yet we have 46.
So we lost 2
chromosomes.
Yeah.
So they were fused, apparently. We lost 2 chromosomes, but we gained, you know, the ability for higher thinking and the ability for complex speech.
Very good. All right, let's go back to Mr. Braden here.
This particular video. Just to give you an idea, if you're a statistician, scientists say that the odds, when the odds of something occurring are 10 to the 400th power. So 10 times 10 times 10 times 10, 400 times. If the odds of something occurring are 10 to the 400th, scientifically that is said to be impossible. Those are considered to be impossible odds. If you had a lottery ticket and the chances of that lottery ticket being a winning ticket were 10 to the 400th, I wouldn't spend much time on that. Scientists have calculated now that the odds of our genome in general forming and chromosome 2, the way it is formed as part of that, that the odds of that happening are 10 to the 600th. If 10 to the 400th is impossible, 10 to the 600th is more than impossible. It's more than impossible that we're the product of random mutations, natural selection resulting from Darwin's theory. So the point is, if we are not the product of natural selection and random mutations, then what are we the product of? And this is what opens the door to a very empowering conversation. As a scientist, what I'm going to say to you is, scientifically, we do not know. Now, we have theories, we have opinions, we have intuition. Scientifically, we do not know, and the reason...
See how this can change not only the air in your home, but also your health. Introducing a revolutionary...
The reason we do not know is because the scientific community is reluctant to follow the evidence to the story that it tells. Rather, they are very emphatic that they want to take the new discoveries, the new evidence, and force it into a pre-existing story that is called Darwin's theory of evolution, when in fact there's room for both. It doesn't have to be either or. Yes, Darwin's theory of evolution describes life in general and processes within life. Not 100%, there's some problems, but I think it does. It's the best that we have. It does a good job. I am not anti-evolution. However, I am adamant that something breaks down in the evolutionary story 200,000 to 300,000 years ago when it comes to us. We're the product of something, and as a scientist, I can only say this. It appears that we're the product of an intervention. An intelligent intervention, some people call it a divine intervention, that took the pre-existing forms of life, the most advanced pre-existing forms of life that existed at that time, and catapulted us light years beyond that. How that happened and who we attribute that to, that's a whole different kind of, that'd be another video. It's a whole different conversation, but you can see where religion comes in, because religion picks up with that intervention. Religion picks up with some kind of what is called a divine intervention, and that is one perspective of looking at this. Scientists aren't going to go after that, but they are now finding that they are at a dead end. And the only way to break the impasse is they have to follow the evidence. Who or what is responsible for us? Now, this is where, as a scientist, I have to leave the conversation. So what I'm going to say to you is not me as a scientist. It is me with informed speculation. So I will use my informed speculation as well as some research that I have done as well. There are multiple, I think there are multiple explanations. One of those explanations is that we are related, as many of us suspect, to intelligence that permeates this cosmos that we simply have not been made aware of in recent history. That theory is supported culturally, almost universally. Every indigenous tradition, well, I will say this, every indigenous tradition that I've ever studied, I have not studied every indigenous tradition on the planet, but everywhere from the highlands of central China and Tibet and the monks and the nuns and the mystics in Nepal and India, all through the American desert southwest and the indigenous first peoples traditions, all the way with the time that I've spent in the Andes mountains of Peru and on to the Altiplano of Bolivia, and their traditions, the aboriginal traditions, the traditions that we find throughout Africa, every one of those says to us that we are related to an intelligence beyond the physical planet that we live on. I'm going to say it another way. Not one of those traditions says that we're the product of random mutations. Not one. So that's culturally. Now, you may say that's not science, and that is a perspective, but that's culturally. Now, archaeologically, in the last 5 years, a growing number of archaeological remnants are being discovered, and I'm consulting on some of these projects, both as a geologist as well as a linguist, to understand what the script on these artifacts is telling us. But a growing number of artifacts are depicting our relationship with a cosmic intelligence.
All right, cosmic intelligence. It can be divine. It can be another life form. My God, there are probably countless different life forms of advanced intelligence in our galaxy, the Milky Way. We don't know. We're not alone. That's one of the most ludicrous, idiotic means of attempted control of the masses I've ever seen. You're alone. There's no one out there. No. So, any thoughts on this? We're kind of running a little short on time here, but I think I can get most of it in here. Anything you want to add?
It raises a lot of questions, you know, and okay, so we have evidence that we are the product of an intervention. And, you know, for what purpose?
Right.
And are we undergoing another intervention right now? Or is this something that's intended to destroy the previous intervention?
When you elaborate a little bit more on that, are we undergoing an intervention right now?
Well, these injections that are being given...
The genetic changes to the, yes.
Yeah, I mean, these are gene transfections. They are gene transfecting as many people on this planet as they can with this foreign gene that's completely unnatural.
Right.
Are they attempting to, I don't know, to either undo what was done, destroy what was done, or somehow adapt us to something, I don't know, some other vision they have for us? Because, it seems to be more about more than just killing at this point. Yeah, a lot of people are going to die, but in the name of what? Is it a breeding program?
I agree.
What's the best
Why
way?
Go after, you know, women of childbearing age and infants and pregnant women?
I agree. Okay. Let's go back to this for a few more minutes and see what else he has to say. Forgive these awful YouTube commercials.
Yeah, you got to get another browser.
I know. It's on my list. Okay. Here we go.
and you see the lines connecting, you know, Australopithecus and, you know, Lucy and, you know, the Lewis Leakeys and all the work that they did. Those are all solid lines connecting all those ancient forms of life. If you look closely, go to the Smithsonian map and you can see this. Modern humans, AMH, are connected to those through a dashed line. And if you look at the legend, what the dashed line will say is that these are speculative or inferred relationships. It means we think that they're there, that we just haven't found the evidence to support them. Darwin put forth his theory in 1859, after 150 plus years. If we were, it's been over 100 years, if we were on the right track to find the evidence supporting Darwin's theory, I think we would be further along than we are right now. We've had the best minds, the greatest scientists, the greatest sums of money, the greatest technology ever existing to help us to support Darwin's theory. And what it does, and this is where it gets tricky. It gets tricky because there's nuance. It validates Darwin's theory for life in general, and I fully support that. It doesn't support our emergence 200 to 300 years ago. Something happened that cannot be explained by Darwin's theory. And this is where so many people fall. They say if it's not evolution, then it's got to be religion. I believe there's a middle ground. I think there's something that's not being accounted for. And that something is the intervention that happened in a way that perhaps we are the product of. And as we develop our potential, as we develop the untapped potentials within us, I think those potentials will lead us to the deep truth of the answer of who are we and where did we come from. This whole conversation is being pushed by the transhuman movement, or the transhumanism movement, the desire to replace aspects of the human body with artificial intelligence and with robotics, ultimately with the goal of immortality. The only way that we can do that is that we must compromise our natural abilities. When we replace neurons with computer chips, for example, we replace natural blood with artificial chemicals, what happens is our natural abilities begin to atrophy and they die off, they disappear. Brain cells will die off, parts of the brain stop functioning. Research papers are very clear on this. This is the drawback of the transhuman movement that very few people are talking about. But the ability to augment our natural biology with technology is being made to look very sexy, very hip in mainstream media, and to young people that don't know any better and don't know any difference, and who have been conditioned to believe that we are a flawed species by virtue of our existence. This is what is taught, that carbon-based life is flawed and we are a flawed species, and that the only way that we can be healthy in our bodies and successful in life is by embracing artificial intelligence, computer chips in our brain, and sensors in our skin, chemicals in our blood. That thinking is driving this transhumanism movement. The problem is that if we embrace it wholesale and recreationally, I mean, there are applications for all this that are beautiful applications for someone who's lost the use of a limb in battle in Afghanistan or in Iraq or in a car accident, you know, to be able to have a computer chip in the brain and use the prosthetic to hold your child or to brush your own teeth or fix your own meal. I mean, what a beautiful thing. But wholesale adoption of transhuman technology holds the potential of forever taking away from us the very essence of our humanness. And we need to come to terms with that, and we can't do that until we know who we are and what it is that we're giving away. We haven't even begun to tap the potential of what it means to be fully human. And
maybe those who built us haven't given us the opportunity to begin to tap the real potential that is here, inherent in our chromosome and DNA makeup. We are restricted still. It's as if they don't want us to realize the other 95% of our brain power, potentially, because we'd be unmanageable. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Are we a slave species? Maybe. I don't know. I have lots of questions. This is a very fascinating topic. We have about 4 minutes left. Let's see if he has anything to say in the next 60 seconds.
I will dedicate the rest of my life to doing my very best to share that potential and bring it forward as I come to understand it on deeper and deeper levels. And I know that other people are doing the same thing.
Okay, we'll wrap it up there. That was very interesting. Chromosome number 2, without really any equivocation, has indications of, I can call it proof. I'll call it proof just for fun. I'm not speaking for anybody else but me. A proof of intervention. Somebody cleaned up those DNA conflicts after the two chromosomes were merged with the telomeres stuck in the middle of the merge. That's a strange one. I don't find it frightening, insulting, offensive, unbelievable, or any of those things. It is. It is what it is. I don't pass emotional judgment on these things. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it's definitely proof of a higher intelligence that did intervene on our behalf, for better or for worse.
Or their behalf, whatever.
Their behalf. Yeah, it remains to be seen, I guess.
Anything about chromosome number 7 that intrigues you? The idea that there was intervention and we were given the ability to speak at a very high level of articulation intellectually and to sing. Now that, to me, that's very interesting. Singing.
It is. Well, yeah. The whole thing is very intriguing. We lost two chromosomes. And yet we gained these other abilities.
All right. Let me play a little bit of singing for you. For you, too. Here we go. Okay, what would the world be like if we didn't have singing, or great music for that matter? It doesn't really separate much. The instruments sing or the voice sings. But we've been given some really remarkable things here. It's too bad we're not better able to be good custodians of what we have. We're watching it all go to hell now, quite frankly, which is not a lot of fun.
Well, we've been poisoned.
Intentionally, without any equivocation. This is deliberate. There is war on humankind right now.
Yeah, there's no question. Starting with, let's talk about the minerals in the soil. Once the minerals are depleted from the soil, right. I tell you, you're not going to activate all of the codons of your DNA without a full suite of minerals.
No chance. And you can't use vitamins unless you have proper minerals in your body.
Yep.
And that's a fact. All right,
the minerals they've been called stardust.
I like that idea. I do.
So get your minerals.
Indeed. Okay, we have to run. We're running late, and thank you. Good job.
Okay,
very interesting
good job.
Material. Okay.
Yep. All right, thanks, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
Okay. And we'll be right back with more in just a few. Hang on.